Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. Today, I am so happy I get to chat with a friend of mine, John Hansen of PI Social Media Network. I love the way he thinks. I love to chat with him. I love the way he presents new and really compelling ideas. So let me tell you a little bit about John. He is the head of PI Social Network. That show reaches more than 2 million syndicated readers, listeners, and viewers worldwide every month. The PI Social Media Network was recognized by the Social Media Bible as being one of the top 120 most influential media companies globally. I can only aspire to follow along with this one. The PI Window on Business on Blog Talk Radio now airs on throughout the week at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and at 10 o'clock at night Eastern Standard Time. The PI Window show is a featured show across the Blog Talk radio network. Again, I'm going to try to catch up with John. So, John, welcome. I'm so glad to have you back on the show. It's been a while since we had an opportunity to just sit down and pick each other's brains.
Well, yeah, it has, Denise. It's been over a year. It's hard to believe time flies by so quickly, but somebody once reminded me of the fact that once you get on the other side, not you, of course, but me, once you get on the other side of 50, it seems that the years click by that much faster. And I'm telling you, I'm blinking and I'm thinking, where did the summer go? Where did spring go? And now Christmas is just around the corner. So it's amazing, eh?
It's horrible. I think about 4 weeks ago, maybe. It was in August. I don't get out a whole lot. I don't like to shop. So, and everybody who listens to me knows that I can't stand to shop. I buy my cars online. If I could buy my groceries online, I would. But I had a dentist appointment, and I had some errands. And I wandered into a little store that had been recommended to me, and the first thing that assaulted me was Halloween. It was August. I was not happy. I just said, oh, no. But you're right. I mean, I thought, no, I'm not going to give in to the temptation to buy more stuff that I don't need. I left, and an hour later, Halloween is here. So you're right. It's going really fast.
Well, and you know what? They're already selling Christmas trees here. Not the case, but it's within the next week. But, you know, your point is well taken. I mean, the fact is that we hardly had a chance to catch our breath between one season to the next. I mean, sports fans out there will recollect the fact that when NHL hockey, for example, the Stanley Cup end in let's say, March or April, now goes through till the end of June, so you're watching the games in your shorts. Meanwhile, it's a 7/24 world where it's sort of the lines are blurred between one to the next. But that's what makes it exciting. I mean, that's what makes social media exciting, isn't it?
It is. And I had a conversation with a girl yesterday, and I'd love to pick your brain on this. We are 24/7. We are kind of just giving way, way, way too much information about ourselves on the internet. And I would like to kind of know what you think about sharing and just throwing it all up. I mean, there sometimes, you know, here's the thing. I don't want to see you in your bikini holding your boobie. I don't. Just don't show those pictures to me on Facebook. Yeah, where is the line? Where do we draw the line between social media marketing and just really getting stupid on social media?
Well, yeah, interesting. And in fact, I will talk about this throughout the segment today with regards to the Wall Street Journal and, you know, what's happened there with traditional media and social media. And one of the things that I found very, very interesting is that people somehow put the emphasis on the media itself. Sorry, Marshall McLuhan, the media is not the message to the certain extent that you may have implied. And they forget about the fact that the content or what they're saying out there is so very, very critical. And you have to have something of value to offer. You also have to remember the fact that once you put something out there, it's forever out there. And I think what's ultimately happened with social media is it's made us all courageous to varying degrees, because we sometimes would do or say things within the realms of a Facebook that we wouldn't even think or dream of doing in person. And it's that loss of what you call that personal connection that I think is one of the most problematic in relation to what your question is about. I don't want to see someone in a bikini. I don't want to be assaulted by someone popping up on the chat in my Facebook who I've never talked with before, hammering me for money or receiving a spam by way of the various social networks of someone calling me dear and saying they want to have a love relationship or they want to have money. I mean, it happens all the time. And I think what we have to realize is, and Susan Brenner, distinguished NCR professor of law, said this best as it related to crime, is we shouldn't assume that crime vector through cyberspace is anything different, because in many of the cases outside of the medium, it's still breaking the same laws. Well, the protocol for conduct on social networking or social media should be the same as the protocol is whether you're in person, whether you're on the radio, whether you're writing a letter. If you won't do it in person, don't do it on the social networking sites. That's the simple rule.
Exactly. My attitude is, if you come to my door, and I really don't want you to come to my door, I don't answer it. But if I do open the door, I am duty-bound to be cordial to you, and you are bound to be cordial to me, which means that you're not going to stick your political flyer in my face and say, vote for me. If you do, I throw you off of my porch. The point is that you have to treat people with the same courtesy and common sense online that you would if they were standing right in front of you. Because if you do something nasty to somebody online, they're limited in what they can do. You do something nasty to somebody in person, you'll probably get your nose bloodied.
Well, and it's kind of an interesting thought there, because I remember reading a book many, many, many years ago, and they drew the parallel between small-town living and big-city living and driving in the car and hitting a puddle and splashing a pedestrian on the sidewalk.
Right.
They said, when you drive in a small town, if you were to do that, chances are you'd get out and apologize simply because you likely know that individual either personally or indirectly because it's a small town. In a big city, you splash and you just keep going. And what they're saying is we need to have more of that small town value as we see other
right.
people. And I think that's really a fletching. All social media does in many ways is amplify, if you will, and I like to use that word amplify, or compound behavior, whether good or bad. It extends its reach over a much broader audience. And I think that's really what the biggest importance is here, is that, again, social media should not lead, and going back to what I said earlier, what should lead is common sense, common decency, the rules of etiquette and as such should be applicable regardless of what medium you're in. And that is, I think, part of the key. In fact, just to digress a little bit, I interviewed Dr. Jackie Black once, and we're talking about cyber dating, which, interestingly enough, was a hugely popular broadcast, which tells you something in of itself. And she had made the comment that, it's not really dating until you actually physically meet somebody and sit down and have dinner with them. But they call it cyber dating. You don't really know with whom you're dealing on the other end there. And I think that's part of the misconception about social media, is that it implies a knowing, it implies a familiarity that some people haven't been able to really grasp in terms of managing it properly. Yes, there is a certain implied intimacy that isn't available because it does make you accessible. Yes, it is invasive because it comes into your home. You made a good point, Denise. You said at the door, if somebody knocks there, you can close the door on them. Physically, you can create hard boundaries. The trouble with the Internet and social media is that there isn't hard boundaries. It does come in, and it's almost pervasive in certain ways and insidious if you allow that element in, which is part of the problem that people have with kids on the Internet and some of the challenges, is that it penetrates in the home without you really knowing about it. It penetrates
right.
into the workplace. And that's the key power of social media, and how you use that is again, for good or bad. I mean, that's what it is. But I think at this particular stage, I think there's a lot of things that have to be evolved more so in understanding and truly harnessing the power. And it is a very powerful means by which we can connect, but harnessing that power in a productive way.
That's exactly right. And one of the things Larry Wingett and I were chatting about this the other day is that Facebook and texting seem to be, I find them time stealers. I mean, you can really get caught up in all of that. One of the things that I am noticing, and I'm hearing it from some of my clients who have brick and mortar businesses, if you will, that they have employees who are quite literally stealing up to 2 hours a day texting and chatting. And I had one guy say, look, I had to fire a guy because I realized after watching him, observing him, that he was stealing at least 2 hours a day from me just texting.
Well, you know,
what do you do about that? I mean, to me, the employer ought to be the one to say, hey, this is unacceptable. Put that phone away. But a lot of them won't, so it's passive theft.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. And seeing there's the other side of the two-edged sword. Social media becomes the scapegoat for other more deeper problems within an organization. You know, whether you take a two-hour lunch, whether you're talking on the phone for 45 minutes. And, I mean, the problems are universal. And again, I go back to what Brenner said. You know, cybercrime, just because it's vectored through cyberspace doesn't mean that it still isn't long-standing crime that's illegal regardless of what medium is used. There's radio, there's television, there's phones. Medium or media's change, evolve. That's the nature of progress, if you can call it that. But the inherent or underlying problems still exist. An employee used to steal an hour by being on the phone. An employee mm-hmm. used to steal a half hour here and there by taking an extra lunch. Productivity isn't hurt by social media. What productivity is hurt by is inherent problems within the enterprise itself. So in that instance, I always like to say, you know, don't shoot the messenger. Look at what the real problem is and deal with it. And in that particular organization, you know, chances are the individual with whom you're talking probably has other problems along that lines with other people, and you've got to look at your company. And again, I'm speaking to you from the standpoint of not only being an entrepreneur of a small business, but I was president of a publicly traded company, of having 10 employees to 100 or so employees, plus employees. You know, the basic rules are the same. So sometimes, I think that while social media may make things a little bit more convenient and perhaps maybe even a little bit easier to obfuscate your lack of production, the reality is lack of production and distractions have been always a big part of business since the beginning of business.
Well, when he was telling me that he fired this guy, my initial thought was, well, apparently the employee wasn't really – he just wasn't there. I mean, he was not involved in the process. Maybe he didn't have enough information about what the process was that he was supposed to be working in. Maybe he didn't see the entire picture and he just wasn't engaged. Or, alternatively, he was just a crappy employee. But, you know, my thought was, you know, was this guy truly engaged? Was he part of the production process? Was he really passionate about what he was working on? If he had been, I think that phone would have been in his pocket. But that's just my observation.
See, here's the point, and it is a good point, and, you know, this is an interesting discussion in and of itself, track to take. But there's two sides to it. Number one, you cannot motivate employees. Put that out of your head. You know, you can't make a bad employee a good employee. You know, what you do is you create the environment that attracts good employees and then give them the tools they need to flourish. But ultimately, it's up to the employee to do the job. You know, I hear this all the time, you know, rah-rah speeches. You know, this isn't halftime, and I'm not Newt Rockne, and we're not going to win one for the Gipper. You know, we're not dealing with an acute moment in time. We're talking about a consistent marathon of hard work, of commitment to the organization, of commitment to the vision. That motivation resides within the employee. As an employer, what you have to do is, in essence, provide the environment that helps that to flourish. Now, if you've made a bad hire, and you know, we can go off on a separate tangent on this, and the fact is that most organizations and HR departments do a horrible job mm-hmm. at screening and selecting employees. But that's another discussion for another day. But ultimately what happens is if that employee isn't going to do the work and you've provided the environment in which they could do the work, then you get rid of them. On the other side of the coin, if you are a small business or an entrepreneur, and I speak from experience because, you know, I was not the perfect entrepreneur or the perfect senior exec, you get locked up in your own vision of what you need to do. And ultimately, you can add to the problem by isolating the employees. In other words, it becomes a separate communities or silos within an enterprise itself. So, I mean, where your job is not to motivate the employee to do well, but your job is to create the environment for them to do well. And to create that environment, you need to be engaged with them. And in that way, getting back on the social media track, it's very similar to social media. You know, you get a big following, you get listeners, you get readers, you get an audience built up over a period of time by engaging them. And that's a key, Denise. You know, one of the things when I wrote, and I just did a post this morning on the Wall Street Journal scandal and saying, is this the final nail in the coffin for traditional print media? Simply because in 2009, J. William Grimes, who is a media expert, he was essential or a key part of starting or launching ESPN years ago, said that print newspapers would be gone. For all intents and purposes, the daily newspapers would be gone within 5 years. That was 2009. And one of the things about the Wall Street Journal scandal is that, and I don't know if your audience knows about this, but it broke, where the Wall Street Journal, in an effort to boost circulation numbers, actually through third-party companies, not that they own, but independent, arm's-length third-party companies, would use them as a vehicle to buy back their own papers at a penny a paper, thus inflating artificially the circulation, and hence because in traditional media, circulation equates to higher advertising rates, they right. were booing their circulation. And what they miss, and I think this is the key point that organization misses, and it ties into the quality of content and what you do and say on social media, what they ultimately miss is that in the real world, in terms of where the medium is going now, one of the key things is that true reach and influence is dictated by what you can call a convenient accessibility, which facilitates real-time conversational, which is unilateral, what I call unilateral or non-instantaneous exchange of information. Short version, even shorter version of that is you get involved with your communities, you contribute something to those communities, then you're going to have people who are going to want to connect with you. When you connect with them, and that's where the power of social media comes in over, let's say, traditional media, is the instantaneous nature by which you can be engaged with someone. Ultimately, that's where you start getting that compounding effect. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I see it every day. I had a conversation with a gal yesterday from Facebook. She said, I have been watching for a long time. I'm a fan of your radio show. How it happened, John, is she added me to one of her groups. Now, you and I both know that you don't add people to groups. That's rude. You know, you're pulling me into something that I may or may not have any interest in. If I want to join, I'll join. So invariably, my practice is to just unjoin. I leave. Well, I went over and I looked at this group. I didn't know who this girl was. She knew who I was, but I had no idea who she was. And she had written a very nice, glowing, in fact, kind of a little mini bio of me and what I could bring to this group. Well, you know, my ego thought that was pretty cool, and I was very flattered, and I said, okay, I'll stay in the group, and I sent her a note and explained that normally I would leave, but, you know, I was happy to be in the group because, you know, I thought maybe I could bring something to the group as per her description of what it is that I do. Long and short of it, we got in a telephone conversation yesterday that was tremendously helpful to both of us. Now, I had not met this girl, but she had been following me around for quite a while on Facebook. And it was delightful. It was a delightful conversation. I was glad to meet her. But it just happened because...
See, that's the relationship aspect, Denise. You see, what you've done in the past is you've brought value.
Exactly.
You weren't broadcasting. You weren't saying, look at me. You weren't saying, oh, I've got the latest and greatest way to make money on the Internet, MLM
right.
and all this kind of
make $20,000 in 10 minutes. Yeah.
That's right. You know, I mean... give me a break. You know, Larry Wingate, you talk about, and I love talking with Larry. I think he's a little bit soft sometimes.
Are we talking about Larry Wingate?
He said something, which is very true. He's sick and tired of the self-professed gurus who come on and tell you how they're the experts and how they can help you to make millions of dollars.
Right.
You know, the fact remains is at the end of the day, you have to be able to add value within the spheres of influence that you have. And those spheres of influence are multiple contact points, are convenient access points for your target group or your audience or those with whom you want to connect. And that can be through blogging, that can be through Blog Talk Radio, that can be through internet television, and, of course, the social network groups. All four of these are uniquely independent but inextricably tied together. And you can't have a true social media presence without having a presence in each one of those and cross-pollinating across each one of those. But the key point is, what are you cross-pollinating? What are you sharing? That goes back to what you said at the top of the conversation, Denise. You know, I don't want to see somebody in scantily clad outfits or someone talking to me of this nonsensical latest and greatest new product that comes in. You know, unless it's a hair growth product, and both myself and Jim Bouchard would be happy because he's already bald on getting them. But, sorry, Jim, I had to say that because he's my 49th parallel co-host and we have to give digs at each other every now and then. But the point
well,
is,
listen,
you have that...
Let me interrupt here just a little bit. I have a well-known weakness for bald men. So between you, Jim, and Larry Wingate, I'm happy. I'm a happy girl. That's all I've got to say.
Yeah, but with Larry, you love the boots.
Yeah, but I love the head, too. I love his bald head. I hope he's not
listening today.
Well,
you know, there it is. So, bald men of the world unite. I think they even started a bald men's group on there that I was invited to. I've sort of joined, but more as an advisory member because I still have a few sprigs coming out of my hair. Right? But, again, that's a story for another day.
Right.
But you were mentioning this. You know, if you have the proper content that adds value to the communities you're looking to serve or with whom you're looking to connect, all of a sudden, the size of your group takes on a secondary importance to the relevance of your reach. And the relevance of your reach is the degree of how do you influence, how do you impact people with what you're writing, what you're saying, what you're televising. All of these things come together. And if you do those things properly, you know, it happens almost by chance. You know, Seth Godin once said that he was on the verge of just packing it all in because he didn't think anybody was ever listening to him. You know, it's kind of a funny thing because when you're – this is the interesting context of social media is that oftentimes you have a lot of people around you, but you're really, in essence, alone because it's just you interfacing with your system, but you're talking with other people. And sometimes anyone who ever writes, anyone who ever broadcasts, I don't care who you are, it's just like standing up in front of a large audience. You know, I've stood up in front of 400 or 500 people. I get the pre-podium butterflies, even though I've done it hundreds of times. But anyone wonders, am I making a connection with someone out there? Am I making a difference? And you wait for those echoes of confirmation. Not confirmation that drives you to become contrived. In other words, how do I write a story to get people to pay attention? Or a one of self, what you can call self-worth building. Because ultimately, who you are and what you believe, you have to stand for whether anybody's listening to you or not. But that's the authenticity that people are looking for out there. So when Seth Godin wonder, we all wonder. And it happens almost by chance to a certain degree, and I like Gladwell's tipping point, is that if you are able to create the content and then the interconnectability that can transcend periods of months, if not years, and I'll explain that in a moment, all of a sudden now you will start to see your audience begin to grow. You'll start to see people talking about it, and it'll surprise you. I mean, just the other day, Denise, I checked out a link on one of my blogs. I write 13 blogs and 3 radio shows and 1 TV, internet TV show. And, you know, sometimes I'll check out the links of what's coming in if I don't recognize it. Well, it turns out that George Washington Law School posted one of my blogs on their site as a resource, and I didn't know that. Now, could I have planned that? Absolutely not. But somewhere along the lines, and what they wrote on their site was, is that it's not just providing information, but provides in-depth information, that's worth rating. You can't manufacture that. You can't write to try to build an audience. You have to write what you believe. Stand on the principles. Do your research. Do your homework. And then once you get that first step done, then that's where the power of social media can come in and that cross-pollination effect to which I had referred earlier. I mean, does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And we're going to go back a little bit to that whole authenticity thing. I really hate to see people get up on Facebook and LinkedIn and one day they're one thing and the next day they're trying to brand as something else. And they're constantly pivoting because they're listening to other voices and not their own. And I feel so bad for these people. And I see it all the time. To me, it's a sad thing because that means that you are not speaking from a place of authenticity. You're trying to be something to everybody. And it never works. So stop it.
Yeah. You know what? That's an interesting point. They go with the wind. Whatever they do. And the more you try to do that, the less success you will have. What you are is what people see, and that's where personal branding comes in. Your brand is you. That's your unique imprint or fingerprint on the world. You know, you can have 10 people cover the same story, and I'll touch on this on the listening curve. Let's say with Blog Talk Radio. You know, what I've interested, I've interviewed Canada's trade minister. Last week I did a show with Pat Brown on our new Buckingham This Week show, tracking, and she did an on-air profile of a predator who is looking to abduct women. We're wondering, in the Gatineau region, wondering if he's actually
I looked at that story. That's horrible.
Well, now you see, now here's the thing. It's an interesting story. We tried to do a public, by her building the profile, and Pat is, of course, exceptional at what she does on that. And listeners, Pat's, of course, a fixture on Nancy Grace and Dr. Drew and the like. What was interesting is that story drew an audience that was there. But if you were to try to say, now I want to replicate that and do that every week, or I want to make it story-focused, you're going to get an audience that, I guess I'm saying, is some people are going to listen because of the story and never tune into you again. Other people are going to listen to you for the first time because of the story, and they're going to stay with you. And that's the retention factor that over a period of years builds up what you call your core audience. It's really an interesting thing. So what draws people to you may be a story. What keeps them with you is the unique perspective that you bring to that story. You know, you're not just regurgitating facts that can be readily accessible anywhere. Yeah, and I think that's the problem with traditional media, by the way. If you look at things in terms of traditional print, they're reporting. And what they're doing is reporting the same facts that are always out there, rather than getting into it and saying, what is my own personal perspective on this? What does my research tell me? You know, I don't know if it's because they fall into the bad habits or traditional habits or there's a laziness in there. But
all of the above, I think.
Yeah, and what you have to do, Denise, you have to make that story your own. In other words, you have to have an opinion that builds your brand. And that's why when you're talking about, you know, people who change with the wind, who try to, you know, figure out what they have to say to get people to listen, never get people to listen. You become the constant, and your views become the constant, and then people follow you. And people follow you regardless. Certainly, now, stories are important. Not going to downplay that. You know, we look for having great stories to cover, and they draw people. But people will turn on very, very quickly if you don't have something new to say or if you don't have anything to add beyond that particular point where you have some engaging conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole idea of again, going back. And it's all along the stream we talked about at the very top of the hour. What are you using social media? How are you adding value through social media and the various channels it provides? So that's, you know, I think part of the problem with newspapers and where Wall Street Journal went off track, I think where traditional journalists, and I've talked to many award-winning journalists, one of them, who had a fear of blogging because it puts them on a frontline relationship, not removed through the certainty or the comfort of being on a print, but you're actually out there, will have trouble getting into the new medium. But what happens is that they look at it and the newspapers have had that broadcast mentality, and when numbers are sagging, which they are, and revenues are dropping. I mean, Grimes pointed out the fact that, you know, they went from 20% ad revenue down to 10% ad revenue. Like, the declines in dollar amounts are staggering of the total ad revenue that's out there. Newspapers are dying. I think what's happening is that they don't know how to right the ship. And the way to right the ship, of course, is to have that direct and personal and engaging contact afforded through social media. But the conflict, of course, is by adapting to the social media edict of engagement, of building that direct rapport. They, in essence, have to transform their organizations at its very core, because social media is indeed a threat to traditional media because of its real-time accessibility, because of its conversational aspect that just doesn't exist within traditional print. I mean, you send a letter to the editor of a newspaper, if you do hear back, it's going to be a matter of weeks, if at all. If a blogger's on the ball, and you post a comment, and this is one of the reasons why I try to respond to every comment on Facebook, LinkedIn, and in all the blogs, you get an immediate response which warrants further conversation. And so the media has changed the dynamics there. So, you know, but you have to have that content and that unique brand before you can start expanding and bringing on numbers that are that core group that grows to be in your the heart of your audience. And that, I think, is where we're, again, traditional media is mixed. That's where I think people who look at trying to say something to draw people without reflecting who they really are find problems. You don't write to the audience. You write what you believe. And if you have something worthwhile to say, the audience will find you. That's really the net of it. And then at that point, you're now ready to leverage all the mediums within social media.
Well, I agree. And, you know, I'm one of those people that I just don't take a newspaper. I cannot. I think many, many years ago I did have a Wall Street Journal subscription, but who has time to read that, really? I have never taken a local paper. I don't pick up a local paper. Most of them, I find they're just garbage. And I can see why newspapers are in a world of hurt. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to really do that anymore. But I am surprised, I have to say, that it was the Wall Street Journal that was caught up in this. I would have expected that of the New York Times. I am surprised.
Well, you know, the Times are having trouble, so it's all of them.
Oh,
I
know.
Yeah, you know, but there you go. I mean, and everyone's pointing the finger at Murdoch, and they're saying Murdoch's done to the Wall Street Journal what Conrad Black did to the Financial Post and, you know, and the Chicago Sun-Times with his Hollinger. But you know, it's an interesting thing because they have fallen victim to their fatal flaw of fighting. You know, what's that old saying about a general always fighting their last battle? They're mm-hmm. trying to address a problem that no longer exists in the same context that they know. And
right.
It's very difficult to do that. You know, I mean, local television stations are dying. Terrestrial radio, you know, has its challenges. You know, there is going to be a meeting somewhere along the lines where old and new media will be forged together. But I think it'll be driven more by the content. Let me give you an idea of and I mentioned this term cross-pollination before. Let me give you an idea, and this is where you've got to be in the game, and we've got to be committed. You can't be on the outside just sort of sending out bits of information, and this is what most companies do, corporations do very badly. They apply the same broadcast mentality they do in advertising and newspapers that they do to social media, and they don't realize it's a marathon versus a sprint. But in 2009, I had a guest panel featuring some top people, and it asked the question, has blogging crossed the threshold of legitimacy? And the reason that show came about to me is because the FTC had announced that they were going to start scrutinizing bloggers very, very closely in terms of their content and holding them accountable if they were doing infomercials. In essence, if they were expressing opinions, the FTC said they were going to investigate whether or not those opinions are being shaped, if you will, by kickbacks or by, you know, somebody getting a free product, and in return for the free product they do the writing. And of course, the irony here is with Wall Street Journal is part of their kickbacks to
companies,
their facilitators, is they not only got preferential ad space, but they actually did editorials on these companies talking how great they were solely because they were allowing themselves to be used as a fence, if you will. I like that term, fence. For Wall Street Journal to buy back its own newspapers at a penny. So what ultimately happens in terms of that is when we look at that, I did that story in 2009 and said, you know, if the FTC is paying attention, does this mean blogging is legitimate, especially in and that was in June, especially in December that they had announced that same year that they were holding in Washington roundtable discussions on can traditional media survive the Internet. Now, that was an interesting story in a pocket in and of itself. The Wall Street, and then, of course, in the fall of 2009, months after that first show aired on my blog, so I've got the radio now on the blog, I wrote a piece talking about J. William Grimes' prediction that, you know, print media would be gone or dead in 5 years. Daily newspapers would be a thing of the past. You know, it was 2009, so by 2014, he said they'd be gone. So there was a separate story that had its own draws on it. Now, the Wall Street Journal article broke. What happened? I incorporated and put in the story that I wrote about that, going back to that FTC roundtable or panel discussion in 2009. Guess what happened? The 2009 radio show hit started to get, or show started to get a bigger audience than it did the first time it aired.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I believe that.
And of course, what I did within that audience, I'm seeing that activity. It's still early to tell to what degree it's going to come about, but it's an interesting perspective. And this is the beauty of Blog Talk Radio and social media, is that the live broadcasts are great, but it's the on-demand versions that really drive the listener base. But what was interesting is because Blog Talk Radio has that available on demand, I could then use that and provide the link in the here and now with a relevant context and providing an interesting historical line, if you will, timeline to what was going on. Conversely, on that particular radio segment or show, I put in the link to today's article on the Wall Street Journal. And so what you've done is you've built a mosaic, if you will, a pattern, if you will, linking the different medias together and one pulling the other. Some people like to listen, some people like to read. All of these things ultimately come together and they have ongoing relevance, they have ongoing interest. And so if you have the first step, which is create your own unique brand. Don't write to the masses. Write to yourself. You know, what was it? Unto thyself be true. And have enough confidence that if you do your research and you know what you're talking about and you have an interesting way of writing, that you will get the audience. It isn't going to happen overnight. Seth Godin, remember him. I mean, where is he today?
Yeah.
Where the concern. And then you start leveraging the various mediums. All of a sudden now you get this cross-pollination of one feeds the other, feeds the other, feeds the other. So, I mean, I do that on a story-story basis. I mean, you know, you just don't know where the stories from the past are still going to have relevant context in the stories of today. And by always being aware of what's going on and being committed to the medium, you can then tie these all together and they build, if you will, a complete picture. And that's what's exciting. Mm-hmm. And you know, I saw that with the blogs. You know, when I launched Blog Talk Radio Show, the first one, the PR Window on Business in March 2009, it was merely an extension of a single blog at that time, the Procurement Insights blog, because I wanted to bring the pages of the blog to life, if you will. I thought, what an interesting concept. That then led to the PI Window on Business blog. And, you know, what was interesting about that blog is it was an adjunct. And follow with me here because it's an interesting time. It was supposed to be just merely an adjunct to the radio show. Well, in June 2009, I launched the PI Window on Business blog, had an outstanding 216 visitors. By August 2010, a little more than a year later, and at 216 visitors in the month of June, in the month of August 2010, just that month, it exceeded 35,000 visitors. Now, where's the cross-pollination? The original blog, the Procurement Insights blog, through that period, I think it was in the month of February, saw an increase of 1,300% in 1 month because of an overlapping story. That's the power of cross-pollination. It's like compound interest. So that's how you tie it all together. And yet each in its own right provide a unique take on a common story. But they all eventually tie together to feed and create the momentum and create the audience attraction. And you begin to build it up. And it's on plateaus. You get a plateau to 1,000, then it levels off, goes down a little. Then it goes up to 3,000, plateaus, levels, goes down. And it works, and it's very much like scaling them out. That's how you build up an audience, and that's how you build up a presence in the marketplace. But it takes time, and that that's where you, again, the power of social media comes in, because it levels the playing field, big corporation to one individual. It's incredible. In fact, if you'll allow me, I mean, last year I was flown to Sweden to give a keynote as well as host a conference.
I remember that. I was following you during that.
And here I am. I'm talking in front of this audience with the Ericssons, with the Pirelli tires, with the DHL. And at the time, and numbers change and fluctuate and do different things, but at the time, me as an individual had almost as much of a, or the similar kind of ranking in Alexa, which is just one thing. And by the way, as a side note, don't allow just Alexa or one thing to govern or determine or use it as a measurement as to whether or not you're successful, because things fluctuate. But at that point in time, my reach was on a par with some of these major corporations. And the question that I asked them is, how many of you have a social media marketing department? And how many of you have a budget greater than $100,000? And, of course, many of them pay a fortune for social media, for websites and everything else like this. And I said, this is something that you need to know. Quality of content and, you know, the ability to cross-pollinate through all the mediums. Has one individual, I could reach as many people as you're able to reach. What does that tell you about the new medium? What does that tell you about the old method of broadcast advertising? And that's the power. That's really what the power is. And you have to begin to be able to judge it. And so step one, quality of content, be true to yourself. Step two, understand the mediums and how they interrelate to each other. Recognize the fact that the most articles, I've written something like 1,700 blog posts and articles, did more than 300 radio shows, TV is starting to come online. All of these things provide a reservoir of information that usually has a very long shelf life that can be incorporated in future stories. And so you get that ability by staying plugged into what's happening in the here and now and just being interested in the world around you and not just telling the world around you your story. What ultimately happens is you're able to get that cross-pollination effect. And once you get to that cross-pollination effect and critical mass, you then start to measure the true reach or the caliber of that. And I like to use the fact is that, you know, if you have 10,000 downloads, if you use the traditional measurements of what is known as click-throughs, and you know what click-throughs are, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, if you use that, to get 10,000 downloads, in theory, you have to reach 3 million people have to see your message, whatever medium it is. And if you reach 3 million people, the number of click-throughs will tell you whether or not, you know, you're actually having reach. Ultimately, when you sift through everything and filter through everything, that is your real influence. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I
because
do.
You cause
I absolutely do.
Take action. And so, you know, when I look at this, like on LinkedIn, yeah, oh, I have 17,000 connections, and they have this many, and it's Will Smith, six times, you know, the 6 degrees of it.
Right.
At the end of the day, your filtering comes down to is what is the core group that you have, and how many people are going to tune into you, and you'll find that year over year, you'll get a steady increase. So if on a radio show you get 10,000 downloads of on demand every month, you know, that audience in of itself will grow. Then you look at your blog. You know, what's the download or reads of that? Then you look at your internet views on when you get into internet television. What's the read on that? All of those things collectively or individually tells you your reach within each of those mediums. And then collectively, what's the cross-pollination factor on that? That's what drives influence. And I think that's what people fail to realize. We live in a world of...
I think you're absolutely right. They really, and here's another thing that we need to talk about too. I mean, you do need to do everything that you're talking about, no question about it. But here's something that people really miss the boat on, drives me crazy, and that very simple thing is consistency.
Yeah.
You know, don't send out a press release about something that nobody's heard of. Constantly have your work out there. Constantly be a resource for the people who are following you. Share other people's information. Share Seth Godin's information. Share your links. Share whatever you can. Just be a resource. But be very, very consistent about it. You can't pop up every 3 months and go, hey, look at me. I'm over here. Doesn't work. And then people say, well, my social media is not working. Well, you think? You're not doing any. What are you doing?
Denise, truer words have ever been spoken. Here's the, and this is the corporate mindset. I get corporations to retain services all the time. They're in very much what's known as a rapid cycling echo chamber. They don't realize that social media is a marathon. Going back to that announcement, yes, you will have hits, you will have spikes. Going viral, if everybody had the secret to what went viral, then it'd be a much easier word. You don't know what stories are going to hit. So the consistency to which you referred is that you have to be in the game. Sending out a press release is not in the game. Posting and having a conversation without stimulating conversation on an ongoing basis is not in the game. Having a Facebook page is not in the game. Even having fans on Facebook is that I don't spend any time on building fans. I don't spend any time on SEO. And some people may shudder at this. I think the concept of search engine optimization is foo-foo dust. I'm telling you this now.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. I'm a web developer. I'm a web developer, and people say, I need SEO. No, you don't. It's a crock of crap, and let me tell you why it's a crock of crap. You need to be consistent. You need to be blogging. You need to use meta tags in your WordPress. There are tons of things that you can do to drive organic traffic, and all of it means that your message is authentic, you are consistent, and you don't need to pay $1,500 for keyword research every month. It's hooey.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear you say that.
Well, look at the Google scandal. You want to know something? If you do the right story, you will always end up on the first page of a Google search with the meta tags that you talked about based upon the quality of your content. That is how you do it. You don't contrive presence. You create it. That's the biggest lesson that I learned in social media. You don't contrive presence. You create it. And you create it through quality content. You create it through consistently providing quality content. And doing it on a selfless basis. You don't have to be the star of the show. Like, give me an idea. And I laughed at this when I saw this morning. And I don't know if this will mean anything to this guy, but somebody started following me on Twitter. And I posted this on Facebook today saying, this is my Twitter follow recommendation for the day. This individual, and he's at This Is Junaid, so T-H-I-S-I-S-J-U-N-A-I-D. He wrote this in his profile. I write caustic articles about other people because I am not as good and talented as them. I loved it. I thought that was funny. It made me smile. And so that's the power I'm at. This is a guy getting there saying, I'm nasty because I'm not as good as everybody else out there. Now, whether you control this or not, the fact is, it's one of those funny things. And when you share it and pass it on, you're not dealing with this, covering your test paper or your exam while you're writing it. You realize the true power of social media is in the sharing. And point of that, whenever I do articles, for example, I always provide the links back to where my research originated from, where I got the information, where I might have gotten the idea. And you do that because when somebody visits your site, you have something to say, but you're also a resource for them because they may want to see where your ideas originated from, where they came. And that is a foreign concept to people. And that's the whole point. I mean, it's all this sharing, and then it compounds itself, and somebody talks to somebody else. That's how you build towards ultimately what Godin did, and he didn't realize it at the time, but that gradual tipping point, because somewhere along the line, people start picking you up, and next thing you have audiences that you've never had before. You have people listening to you. You have people engaging you. That's what's exciting, and that's what you do, and I think far too often, people put the horse before the proverbial cart when they look at SEO and say, how do I contrive following or search presence? How do I write something to get people who want to see who I am and visit my site? What are my numbers? What are the number of fans that I have? What does that mean?
Here's the thing, John. Google has teams of people who'd live to slap you down. If you find a black hat or a white hat or a gray hat way to increase your search rankings, Google's going to figure you out, and they're going to slap the crap out of you. They do it all the time. They're known for it.
Well, because
they're not going to allow you to manipulate your rankings. They're just not.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you see, what they can't control, any of the search engines, is when you legitimately leverage meta tags related to a quality content story.
Right.
Or
right.
They can't control that because that's driven by so many other factors beyond that. I mean, they could, but in reality, there's so many search engines that you go to. And by the way, one of the things you want to build a brand with, that was an interesting discussion I had with somebody the other day, because I said, you know, type PI window on business. Do you have a website? I said, type PI window on business in any search engine, and we dominate the top three pages. And somebody said, yeah, but what if you're not searching for PI window on business? And I said, well, here's the interesting thing. You hit that point of crossover where people actually start searching on that. But before that, to get there, if I look at all the stories that I've done and typed in, the Wall Street Journal story I did, or I'm doing a series on celebrity CEOs right now, you know, where are they now 10 years later from the dot-com boom? What's interesting is if you type in that person's name, in many instances, I'm within the first 5 or 10. I didn't plan that. It's just that I found the story interesting. I covered it and added my own unique perspective. But that's the tie-in, to just continue to drill that in. And again, you said content, authenticity, leveraging
consistency.
Social media, consistency, all of those factors. You bring those things together, you're going to get your audience. And, you know, that's really where the value comes in. Is when people, when you start getting a following, there's nothing better, or it's a great feeling when people follow you because they choose to, and that they comment on what you have to say. You know, that's, and it doesn't have to be harmonious agreement. Some people, you know, I had one woman, it was one of the funniest things, and I think I wrote about it, where she called me a crazy idiot or something like that. I forget what she said. She said, I something's wrong with my head, because what I had written, in fact, let me see if I can find that story for you, but it was on the...
Somebody
said this to you
online?
Oh yeah, it was amazing. Let me read this. Wrote a comment to this. I'm going to bring it up because what I had written, and this is an interesting story, is I talked about host preparation and doing the homework, and that as a host of a radio show, you have to have respect for your audience, right? You know, you want to be prepared. You want to be on top of the game. You want to do all of these factors. And I asked a question of the thing, and just give me a minute. I'll see if I can find it quickly. Because when it greeted me, first thing in the morning, I'm up at 5:36 o'clock. You know, we have young kids, so that's what happened. But I was up early, and where is it now? And I asked the question, is it worthwhile to tune into a show where the guest has to send the host a list of questions to ask, kind of thing? And you know, I wrote my opinion to that. And this person wrote, and it was funny, Melinda Bates, and she's an author. She actually worked closely with the president of the White House, the Clinton administration, because I think she wrote a book on her inside experiences being the prince and princess of Wales and all of that. She was sort of responsible for facilitating social engagement, so she wrote a book. And she said, I think you're crazy. I do a lot of radios and have considerable experience in training. You know, she was basically saying your comments are ignorant. So she called me a crazy ignoramus, basically, for saying
that. Is just so polite, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're telling me that somebody who is in charge of social engagement feels that it's perfectly acceptable to say something like that to you? Miss Manners would not like this.
I love that. And I sent her a note because I shared it on Facebook. I said, hey, I woke up this morning and somebody called me a crazy ignoramus. I liked about did that is that, number one, whatever I wrote inspired a response. And I was truthfully telling what I
did. True.
It inspired a response for her. She took the time to write this and call me a crazy ignoramus.
Did she spell ignoramus correctly? Did she get that part right?
What's that?
Did she spell ignoramus correctly? I need to know.
Oh, she's ignorant. I said, crazy. I said, ignorant. She called it crazy.
I mean,
you
don't want to be insulted if it's not properly spelled, you know?
Which is very good. And she's very proper. And, of course, her implications are that hosts in general don't have the ability to ask questions. And, of course, you know, and I don't judge other hosts. I just talk about from my standpoint. What I do is segment. I'm doing a segment tonight on the Buckingham this week at 10 o'clock with three former professional athletes in professional football. And you know, there's been a slew of tragedies with sports figures who have retired and haven't made the adjustment to civilian life, where they've actually committed suicide because they leave the sport. A paycheck, and they have to fend in the real world, And they're not equipped to do that. That's a sad reflection. And so, you know, I did a lot of research, and I go into stories about this, and I found out that, you know, even more so than professional sports, where the most difficult transition from work life to retirement life is actually in law enforcement. Police officers have the greatest difficulty in transitioning after they retire to a real life, and part of it is because they're part of this mm-hmm. fraternity. They see people when they retire, they're on the outside looking in, they lose that big contact, that camaraderie that they become familiar and so comfortable with. So it's a very difficult realm. But I like to do research on shows and then, you know, do the segments and do the questions and you know, I believe that's the best way to get the best answers. I'm not saying everybody has to do it that way. I'm just saying when I wrote about it, this is the best way to prepare. And for somebody maybe new to blog talk or new to radio or media, I think it provides a very good track, at least to start defining yourself. And so this is what I said, what I believe is important. You know, prepare. And if you're prepared, you create the atmosphere and the environment for not only the guests but also the listeners to really enjoy the experience. She, of course, was implying that hosts do not have that capability, that what they need is to be led by the hand and told what to ask, when to ask it. And otherwise, the point of the story or the interview will get lost. Well, you know what? That's not the case.
No, it's not.
But on the other side, and we launched a new one for Saturdays in every new month, Denise, I launched a show called Off the Cuff, an intimate conversation with, where there is, you know, just the basic points that want to be covered, but I call it a coffee shop kind of intimate discussion between friends. And, it, I like that because sometimes the best conversations are the off-the-cuff conversations where you have and you just talk about things, and it again, takes on a different life of itself. And then, of course, there's the 49th Parallel show that I do with Jim, where it's basically a commentary where I get to be bombastic and scary with guests. And, you know, Alex, the moderator up there, tells me that I have to be nice to guests. And she made me one time, after having the founder of the 9/11 Hard Hat Pledge, Andy Sullivan, on the show, she made me write out 1,000 times on a chalkboard, I will be nice to guests. So, but that's a forum where, again, not asking questions, I'm giving an opinion. So, you know, it just depends what kind of show you're in.
Right. Well, just for instance, you and I both know that we have no show outline today. As a rule, when I'm interviewing somebody that I have never really spoken with, and I always do a pre-interview because I have, you know, talked with some people who are so deadly dull that even I can't make them interesting, and I just don't allow them to come on my show. But you and I know each other well enough, and we've interviewed together enough that we speak extemporaneously. And it's very much a flow. We bounce around a little bit. It's a conversation. My show is a conversation, and I tell anybody that. It's a conversation. It's not stilted. I'm not going to say, well, John, what do you think of social media? And then let you answer it. I would shoot myself before I do that. But, you know, I mean, seriously, and I have heard those shows, and they're painful. So I disagree with her. I love that she started a dialogue with you. I do. I'm a little startled that she was willing to be that insulting. But that kind of goes to what we haven't really covered is the anonymity. You know, it's easy to just type something. She's a what?
Yeah. She's a lady. If you see the pictures in her books, I mean, this is a woman who facilitated all the social functions for the White House.
I'm surprised, I must say.
And, you know, I guess I peeved her off, but that's okay. But you just brought up a very important point today. It ties back to what we were at the very beginning. Know who you are. Be authentic to yourself. Understand, you know, the format and just talk with people. If you were to try to, if you're interviewing somebody and doing a different story that you're doing for the first time, flying by the seat of your pants isn't the way to go. But if you were to try to do that with us, I think it would do a disservice because we wouldn't be able to talk the way we do. Do you know what I mean? And that's where I think you're being authentic to what you want to do and the show's format as to what it's about. And I think that goes back to knowing who you are and knowing what your show is about and knowing the format that you operate in.
Right.
And far too often, I don't think people have a good sense of who they are in relation to their social media presence or stuff.
You're right. John, we are just about out of time. I need to get you back because we have not covered anywhere near what I needed to cover, but I wanted to share something with you in the chat room. Anissa is in the chat room, and she's a friend of mine. She loves to read Anissa Wardell. Hi, Anissa. She says, I just have to say that John brings up some of the most interesting points. I love reading the things he shares. There you go.
Wow. Thank you. You know what? To me, that is what ultimately, I love writing for myself, but, you know, saying that, it's really a great feeling and a boost for me in that, you know, if you like it and get something out of it, then it just adds that much more value. It just makes it that much more worthwhile. So, you know, you're not toiling in oblivion.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I do, and I'll have to share a story that I heard yesterday about a girl the girl I was talking about at the top of the show. We'll come back to that. In the meantime, I don't think we're streaming any longer. Tell people where they can find you on the internet, and then you and I need to get together. I want to introduce you to a friend of mine who has also been an interviewee on mine. Her name is Carla Lundblade, and she is a psychologist who works with at-risk athletes. I think you two would have a lot to talk about.
Oh, that would be terrific.
She works with some. Oh, she is fabulous. Let me tell you, I'm going to send an email to both of you. Her name is Dr. Carla Lundblade, Lundblade. You can find her on Facebook. She would be fabulous for your show, I'm telling you.
I would love that. And before I give my coordinates, I am very much looking forward because you've facilitated a couple of great things. Jack Singer is one of them. Which on the 22nd, I believe, was scheduled to be interviewed, so I thank you for that. That's an example, Denise, of the sharing over the social media and getting the message out there, that compounding effect. So that was great. I'm very much looking forward to that. Coordinates, simply put, the best place to start with me is any search engine, type PI, window on business, and that will link you up to everything.
Great. Well, everybody, thank you so much for being here, John. Thank you. You're always an amazing source for information. I love chatting with you, and we can't let it go this long. You have to come on again soon. So I will send you an email, and we'll get you back, and we'll talk about it. You know what? We'll just cure the world. We'll just fix everything. So,
that's it. Always in an hour over lunch.
An hour or better. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for being here. Have a wonderful weekend. And this is Denise Griffiths and John Hansen. We are wishing you a great, terrific, safe weekend. And I will see you next week. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Denise. Bye for now.
Bye.